Welcome to Take Note on WPSU. I'm Patty Satalia. Why can it be so difficult to get kids to behave? Our guest has the answer to that question and advice on rediscovering the joy of parenting. Amy McCready is the founder of Positive Parenting Solutions and the author of If I Have to Tell You One More Time, the revolutionary program that gets your kids to listen without nagging, reminding, or yelling. She's also a Penn State graduate. Amy McCready, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
You have literally reached tens of thousands of parents through your Positive Parenting Solutions program. You just wrote a book, which we'll talk about a little bit later. You're a frequent guest on a number of daytime talk shows. I'm wondering, how did a Penn State finance major become a parenting expert?
Who would have thought, right? Well, it almost happened out of necessity. You know, when I graduated from Penn State, thanks to the Penn State Placement Service, I got a great job with a Fortune 500 company. And most of my business experience was in training and development, writing and delivering training programs. And then fast forward many years, I'd been working and traveling everywhere. And then all of a sudden, I was a mom with two toddlers, and I felt completely incapable. You know, I had managed
this large, very capable woman.
Well, supposedly I had managed large groups of people, and that all felt very comfortable to me. But taking care of two toddlers was completely foreign. And so I started, you know, studying positive discipline strategies, and I just found it so empowering because when I started using those strategies with my kids, guess what? They started behaving better. And I always refer to myself as a recovering yeller because I did a lot of yelling. And I knew that wasn't good for me and it wasn't good for them. So I took my business background I'd learned in these great Fortune 500 companies and put it with these fabulous principles of positive discipline that I just loved and started a business. So without that Penn State finance education, I might not have been equipped to start a business and make a go of it on my own.
And you actually did seek individual expert advice.
Absolutely, yes.
Which you say is weird that most of us were willing to dole out money for our son to get batting coaching or
That's
for
right.
us to take golf lessons, but you say we're hard-pressed to part with our money for expert parenting advice, which is one of the most critical things we do.
That's right. So for the job that is the most important thing we'll probably ever do, we receive basically no training. So you go through maybe a six-week Lamaze class, but after that, you're on your own. You know, my son is 16 and he has a part-time job. And he had more training to work at a fast food counter than I did to do the most important job of my life. And so that's sort of a perception that I'm trying to help change because it is worth getting parenting advice, whether you do it, you know, locally at a free service or whatever, but it's a difficult job and it doesn't come intuitively.
No, you said you used to be a yeller.
Yes.
And a New York Times announced yelling is the new spanking.
Yes. Yes.
It's not any more effective than spanking.
No, it's not. And that article just went viral. People went crazy over that article, but it's true. You know, a lot of parents recognize that spanking isn't all that helpful and it's not that effective, and they made the decision that they don't want to do it, but what are they left to do instead? And so they fall into this pattern, as I did, of nagging and reminding and eventually yelling. And they figure, well, at least if I yell, I'll be heard. And it gives you that momentary feeling of, oh, well, at least I got that off my chest. But frankly, it doesn't work all that well. And so the cycle keeps repeating. So the goal is to give parents really practical, easy to implement strategies so they don't have to do all the nagging and reminding and yelling.
Well, the interesting thing about yelling is that something like 88% of those who were polled admit that they
yes,
do it.
Yes.
So a lot of us are yellers. But it's one of the most guilt-inducing behaviors that parents have.
Absolutely. And I've never met a parent who feels good about the fact that they yelled at their kids, but it happens because we're so frustrated. It's sort of a last resort measure. And then afterwards, you feel guilty and you think you're the worst mom or dad in the world. But then the whole cycle starts again. So again, giving them some more practical tools that actually work. Nobody wants to yell, but they don't know what to do instead.
Well, one of the things you say is share the power. And lots of parents think, if I give my child more power, then I am losing some authority. And you say it's the exact opposite.
Exactly, because we are all hardwired with the need for power or autonomy. So if you think about an infant that you bring home from the hospital, if you sort of held down and tried to restrain that infant, she would instinctively fight back. So that need for autonomy and independence is just the way that we're all wired, whether you're an infant, a toddler, a teenager, or a senior citizen. We're all that way. But when you're a kid, you don't feel like you have a lot of power because they have people like us who are calling the shots. We decide what they'll wear, what they'll eat, when they'll go here and there. But as you said, by sharing that power, giving the child more opportunity to make decisions, to have some control over his own life, age appropriately, of course, that fills up that hardwired need for power, and then they're less likely to fight us for power.
So for a small child, you insist that they're going to brush their teeth, but the choice may be, do you want to use an electric toothbrush or your Little Mermaid toothbrush?
Exactly. Do you want to put the toothpaste on or do you want me to? It's simple choices. And, you know, I always like parents to remember the equation, decisions equal power. Anytime you have an opportunity to make a decision, you have some say over what happens in your life, whether it's something really silly like the toothbrush or what towel you're going to use or what you're going to wear that day, every time they make a decision, they get a little hit of power. And so the more that you can incorporate that into your child's day, that fills up their power basket and, again, makes them less likely to fight you with negative power. They're going to get their power one way or another. It's sort of our choice in how that happens. If we don't give it to them in legitimate ways, we proactively fill their power basket, we're going to pay for it with the power struggles.
Now, a lot of what's in your book, if I have to tell you one more time, the revolutionary program that gets your kids to listen without nagging, yelling, or reminding, it's based on something called Adlerian psychology, which fascinates me for a couple of reasons. One is that this is a guy whose ideas are 100 years
old. That's right. That's right. But when you go back and study it, again, it's based on those foundation principles of that hardwired need for power, that hardwired need for emotional connection. Alfred Adler referred to belonging and significance. We all have the need to belong and be part of a group. When we're young, it's our family, that's our community. But the same principle applies in the classroom, in a community organization to which you belong. We all have the need to belong, and we all have the need to feel significant, to feel like we have some control, some power. We make a difference in the world. And those are just hardwired needs. And if we foster on strategies that meet those needs, then the behavior stuff kind of takes care of itself.
And then this whole idea of mutual respect.
Yes.
And I guess what I find especially interesting is that we will yell at our kids, but we wouldn't dream of yelling at a coworker, even though our relationship with that coworker is so much more superficial than the relationship we have with our child.
Absolutely. Yeah. And we tend to respond to our children and our spouses or significant others probably in more negative ways. We yell, we get annoyed, we get frustrated, but we would never do that with our coworker. So you're right. We have to really watch those responses. And, you know, you talked about mutual respect. Parents get so annoyed when kids speak to them in a disrespectful manner. They demand to be respected. Well, you can't demand respect. Actually, you can short term. It's just not a sustainable solution, but you have to earn that respect. So if you speak to them in a respectful way, you know, we still hold them accountable and all of those good things, but that respect is shared, and they will respond and treat you in a respectful way.
I saw on Facebook where your mother said, "I wish I had had your book when I was when I was raising my three kids," meaning you and your brother and your sister. What was the parenting style in your household, and to what extent do most of us adopt what we grew up with?
It's so funny. I think we either, you know, adopt it or go the total opposite direction. I would say, you know, I have very loving parents, and I think all parents do the best that they possibly can. Looking back, I would say that our upbringing was more on the permissive side, not a lot of rules and limits and consequences. So I tend to gravitate towards, you know, more rules and consequences and limits. And you know, when you look at parenting styles, you know, you have the very permissive on one end of the spectrum and you have the very strict on the other end.
Authoritarian.
Yes. And neither one is really the best. You know, what we're striving for and what positive discipline principles assert is that you want to be in the middle. You want to give enough freedom, but within limits, kindness with firmness. And so that's the goal for parents. But of course, we all draw on, you know, what we grew up with, and we try to follow that or go the total opposite direction.
Now, tell us where your book fits in, because our generation grew up, I guess our parents grew up looking at Benjamin Spock's book on raising children. And I remember when I had children, it was Terry Brazelton. Mm-hmm. There's also Susan Stifelman and Jane Nelson and a number of other new child care experts. Now comes along your book. Where does yours fit in and how do you want people to use it?
I would say my book is more similar to the Jane Nelson series. You know, Jane Nelson was sort of the mother of the positive discipline movement, also based on Adlerian psychology. And the way I would like for parents to use it is, think of it almost like a recipe book. It's almost like a step-by-step strategy where recognize that there's no quick fixes, there's no magic bullets, but if you start at the beginning, and you start with some of the key strategies in the book, like mind, body, and soul time, which is, you know, filling that emotional connection and filling that power basket. And if we start with the root cause of the behavior, the other stuff kind of takes care of itself.
Now, I want to pick up on that mind, body, and soul time, because I think it's a fantastic tip. You say give 10 minutes of pure mind, body, and soul time, real individual attention to your child, each child.
Yes.
If you have three, that's 30 minutes every day. Why is that so important, this undivided attention? And I don't think many of us do it.
Well, remember that attention basket that I said we're just all hardwired with, and that power, that belonging and significance. Those are our core emotional needs. And one of the best ways to meet those needs is by spending that one-on-one time and attention with your child. And again, it doesn't have to be a long time sitting down to play a game of Monopoly. It's small hits, you know, 10 minutes once a day where you are totally present in mind, body, and soul. So you ignore the BlackBerry chirping. You let the phone go to voicemail. And the reason that's so important is that it fills their attention basket, but it also sends the message that there is nothing more important in these 10 minutes than the time that I'm spending with you. And that is a huge sense of significance, a big hit of significance for the child. And so much, think about sibling rivalry and fighting. So much of that is about fighting and competing for the parents' attention. When you start doing mind, body, and soul time, you'll be amazed that a lot of that competition goes away.
And in fact, we can't eliminate misbehavior if we don't know why our kids are misbehaving. And that's really what your book is all about, figuring out why. They're doing it for one of two reasons. They want attention.
Or the power, absolutely. And you're right, because so often we tend to put these Band-Aid solutions. You know, we do a timeout, but that's not getting to the root of the real issue. When we get to the root of the issue, a couple of things happen. First, we can sort of, you know, deal with that behavior in the moment, but where we want to get to is to the point where we're preventing it from happening in the future. And by doing that, by getting to the root cause and understanding that, you know, misbehavior is not random, it is happening for a reason. And if we could think about the child when they're misbehaving, like they're wearing a big sign that says, you know what, mom and dad, I want to belong, I want to feel significant, I just don't know how to do it. And so I'm just going about these annoying attention-seeking behaviors and I'm fighting you for power every chance I get to try to send that message to you.
And of course, if you don't pick up on this neon sign, which is their bad behavior, that whole cycle of yelling just continues.
It absolutely does.
Now, you mentioned timeout just a moment ago.
Yes.
And there are two schools of thought on that. Mm-hmm. The National Association for the Education of Young Children says timeout is not a good idea. Mm-hmm. The American Academy of Pediatrics says it is a good idea.
Well, I think, particularly when you look at the Association of Pediatrics, they talk about it compared to spanking. So certainly that's a desirable option with spanking. But I think timeout can create more power struggles in the end. When we force the child to go to their room or go to the corner or the naughty chair for a prescribed period of time to think about their behavior, what is the point of that, really? Are they sitting in timeout thinking, you know, I made a poor choice here. If I could do this over again, what would I do differently? Of course not. They're just stewing. And so for a lot of parents, they'll say, you know what, this just creates more of a power struggle. So should I hold the door shut, Amy, while they're in timeout? Well, if you have to hold the door shut to keep them in timeout, that's a big power struggle. Now, that is different than saying, you know what, we all need to take a chill out break here. Let's both sort of
I'll go to my room, you go to your room.
Yeah, let's calm our bodies down, and whenever you're ready to come back and talk and we can work this out, let's do that. That's a different situation, and that's what happens often in the classroom. You know, the child is asked to leave the activity. When you're ready to come back and join us and be calm, you know, feel free to do it. But the child makes the decision when they come back. It's not the parent saying, you go there for 10 minutes and don't come out. not until you've thought about your behavior.
Well, you mentioned the naughty chair.
Yes.
And anyone who watches television has probably seen Super Nanny.
Yes.
And Jo Frost, who's the host of that program, she often sends or advises parents to send their children to the naughty chair or the naughty step, mm-hmm. I guess, in the house. How valid do you think the advice that parents are getting from Super Nanny and Nanny 411, how valid is it?
I think there are elements of it that are great. And she is such a colorful character. You can't help but love her. But I do disagree with the naughty chair and the naughty step. First off, the name is, I just really disagree with the name. Naughty chair. I'm labeling you as naughty. So that is
self-fulfilling prophecy.
That's right. Okay. It's so discouraging. And then there's a clip that I show to parents in classes, which is from Super Nanny, and where she puts the child in the naughty chair because he's misbehaved. Well, no sooner does she turn around and that child is up out of the naughty chair running around the house. And so Super Nanny or mom have to drag the child back to the naughty chair, sit him down, explain why he's there again, adds another minute. She walks away. This thing happens again and again. And in this clip, after I think it's 56 minutes of this nonsense going on, the nanny says, "Well, that really worked now, didn't it?" And I'm thinking, no parent in their right mind is going to go through 56 minutes of chasing the child in and out of the naughty chair. It's just creating a power struggle.
If you're just joining us, this is Take Note on WPSU. I'm Patty Satalia. Our guest is Amy McCready, a sought-after speaker, writer, and parenting coach. We're talking with her about her book and her Nag and Yell-Free program for correcting children's bad behavior.
Speaking of strategies, you say it's important, and some people may look at this as semantics, that family members have chores, but you don't call them chores. You call them family contributions. Why is that important? And what's the distinction between the two?
I do like to call them family contributions rather than chores, because chores just sends the message that, oh, this is drudgery. Who wants to do a chore? We do enough chores in our life. But when you do family contributions, it sends the message that you are contributing. And that's one of the definitions of significance that we talked about earlier. I make a difference. I contribute in meaningful ways. And I get it. You don't like unloading the dishwasher or folding laundry or taking out the trash. But when you do those things, it makes a difference. Your work matters. It may just sound like words, but every time you say it, it sends that message. And to this day, when I call them family contributions, my kids will still roll their eyes, but I still do it.
Well, that makes me wonder, too. Here you are in the thick of raising your own kids, mm-hmm. two teenage sons. How difficult is it in terms of outside pressure for you to be the parenting expert and for them to be the children of a parenting expert?
Well, it's so funny you say that. I always told my classes when my kids were younger, now, I just want to be very upfront here. I'm going to see you one day at Walmart or Target, and my kids are going to be having an all-out tantrum on the floor. So just know that's going to happen. Well, first off, the term parenting expert, you know, I think that's such a silly term anyway, because how can you ever be an expert in parenting? It's a work in progress. So I don't want my kids to feel undue pressure. I don't want to feel undue pressure, because all of us are learning. You know, my training is in these tools and strategies that I know work, and I make mistakes along the way, so I'm not going to put any undue pressure on myself. The funny thing is when my kids throw the strategies back at me, my son will say, "Mom, I think it's time for a good win then." Or, so I can't pull anything over on them because they know all of the strategies,
well,
that's okay.
But that's probably a good strategy to explain to our viewers. When then? When
yes.
you unload the dishwasher, then explain how that works.
When then is one of the most fabulous strategies, and parents will honestly stop me in the grocery store and say, "Oh, I love the when then," because it's so effective. It's great at diffusing power struggles. So instead of nagging and reminding your kids to do things, set up a when then routine. So it would sound like this: when your room is cleaned up, then you can enjoy your TV time.
And you're not the bad guy anymore.
That's right. When your homework is finished and I've checked it, then we can leave for soccer. So you set the routine up so that the things that they don't really want to do all that much has to be done before the more enjoyable parts of the day. And
stick to it. So if you say,
exactly.
"We're not going to soccer until you do this," you have to stand by that.
You have to. Otherwise, don't even put it out there. So if my son comes bopping down the stairs at 4:45 and when it's time for us to leave to soccer and his family contributions aren't finished, I have to say, "When your family contributions are done, then we'll leave for soccer." And that's tough because a lot of parents say, "Well, Amy, you know, we've paid money for them to be on that team. The coach is expecting him. The teammates are expecting him." Well, guess what? That's a really important lesson. So if
and
you're
it's
late,
the natural consequences, you say, that will really
yes.
teach the lesson. His teammates may say, we lost that game because you weren't here to be goalie.
That's right. And as parents, we're so afraid to be the slacker parent. We don't want to look bad. We don't want our kids to look bad. But that's exactly what we have to do to let them learn the lesson. Because imagine the learning that comes from calling the coach or showing up late and saying, I'm sorry that I was late. The reason was because I didn't have my family jobs done or I hadn't finished my homework. That's an important lesson.
You explain, and I think it's really interesting, in the beginning of the book, why what worked with us doesn't work with our children.
Yes.
The look doesn't work.
Yes.
things like that. And the reason behind why they don't work is fascinating. Just watch one episode of Mad Men and you'll know
isn't that the truth?
Just how different things are.
Well, yeah, so our society has become more democratic as a whole. So think, you know, two or three generations ago, dad ruled the roost, mom stayed home. You know, dad made all the rules, mom and kids fell in line, and that's just the way it was. Now, households aren't like that. And so in most families, mom and dad have equal power. They debate in front of their kids. So naturally, kids think that this is the way it is. In the classroom, they're spoken to with respect. Coaches treat them with respect. That vertical authoritarian style is just not as prevalent, and kids inherently know that. So when parents think, you know, kids today are just so disrespectful, it's not that they're being disrespectful inherently. They're just being raised in a different environment. And they hear mom and dad debate with each other, so they think that it's okay for them to debate. So it's kind of getting used to raising kids in this new world. And parents are kind of at a crossroads because they fondly think back to their childhood where they would never negotiate something with their parents or they would never question something. But that's what
kids
do today.
It was blind obedience.
That's right, blind obedience. And that can work for the short term, but it is not a sustainable solution.
How do you respond to people who say what you said, that kids today, they don't listen, they're ruder?
Well, there are a couple of things. First, this whole entitlement epidemic plays into some of that. You know, our kids are being raised in a different world. However, that doesn't mean that they have to be rude. That doesn't mean that they can't respect authority and respect their elders. But that kind of comes down to, you know, how we handle those types of things at home. So do we set very clear rules and limits, and do we follow through on those every single time? It's hard to expect, or it's unreasonable to expect, that our kids are going to respect our rules and limits if we don't respect them. So I think a lot of it comes into how we parent our kids, treating them with respect, expecting that in return, and making sure that we have a consequential environment set up in our families.
Well, how do we go from the helicopter parent, which was bad enough, to what you call now the lawnmower parent? We want to clear the path and make sure there is no obstacle in Johnny's way.
That is a very difficult thing for a lot of parents because, you know, we have adopted this kid-centric parenting style where everything revolves around our kids. We're so overly involved in their success and their achievement. We want them to do well. So to first recognize that this is problematic, you know, this is creating some long-term difficulties for our kids, their ability to operate independently in the world, which is full of disappointment and frustration and consequences. We are undermining that as we helicopter or we lawnmower, you know, the path for them. So at least recognizing that that is a problem and then taking a step back and saying, okay, where am I overmanaging the situation? Am I doing it with their sports? Am I doing it with their school?
And why am I doing it?
And why am I doing it? Mostly, it's out of fear and it's out of love. We do it with the best of intentions, but recognizing it is the first step and then saying, okay, how can I step back? And I'm going to shift the responsibility. So where I've taken responsibility for this in the past, now you are responsible. So it's that no rescue policy we've talked about.
And you also used in presentation something that I thought was brilliant, and it was a commencement speech by Dave McCullough,
yes.
in which he got up, he might have been the first person ever to say to these kids, you are not special.
It was brilliant, but he's so right, you know? These kids all think that they are the center of the world because that's how they've been raised. They've been the center of their parents' world for so long, and they just expect that society will view them the same way.
Dr. Benjamin Spock has been blamed, or was blamed at his height of his popularity, for creating a permissive society and for the need for instant gratification. But today, we've got parents who are dealing with kids who are on social media, and there's constant, instant gratification for any little thing that they put out there.
Right. Yeah, and it really is a problem as we look at this entitlement generation. You know, of course, again, they feel like they're the center of the universe. They're getting instant feedback and gratification. Even when they put out bad behavior on Facebook, they get 50 likes within the next few minutes. So how, as parents, do we deal with that? Of course, we can't limit all exposure, but, you know, when your kids are at home, I really do recommend putting some limits on technology and, you know, having a finite amount of time that they can be on it. And again, sticking to your family values and your family rules. There are so many outside influences, but the family is still going to be what makes the biggest impression on them and is going to influence their behavior for better or worse.
You recommend family meetings.
Yes.
And I find that interesting too, because we have weekly work meetings. Mm-hmm. Why couldn't they work in a family as well?
Well, a family meeting is one of the best ways to empower kids, because in a family meeting, they are involved in the decision-making process. And we talked about how decisions equal power. So when you have a family meeting, you can talk about, okay, we're going to go out to dinner this weekend. We can afford to spend $30. What should we do? Instead of mom and dad always making the decisions. If we've been having a problem with hogging the bathroom, let's get together as a group and figure out a solution to this. So family meetings are just a great tool. There's another really cool component of family meetings in that they start with compliments and appreciations. So every member of the family will go around and give a compliment or appreciation.
And that's not just praise, though?
No, it's something that you did. Like, you know, I really appreciate the way that you helped me with my geometry homework this week. Thank you so much. Or I might say, you know, Jason, I really appreciate the way you unloaded the dishwasher without being asked. That was a big job that I didn't have to do. So it's something helpful and specific that each person did that week that made a difference for you. And just that between siblings is so powerful, because they will wait to hear what their siblings are going to appreciate about them, and it gives them practice in giving and receiving compliments. So that's just a little part of the family meeting, but it's so powerful. We talked about mind, body, and soul time earlier. It's kind of mind, body, and soul time for the whole family.
And the idea is to make them fun as well.
Exactly. You don't want it to be drudgery. It doesn't want to be like a work meeting. You want it to be fun. And so we always recommend that family meetings end with a family fun activity. So it doesn't have to be a big deal. It can be a quick little board game, or everybody can tell a joke, or you can go and jump on a trampoline or go for a bike ride, depending on how much time you have. But it's just something fun that you do as a family. And it just reminds us that, you know what? We are a cool family, and we like hanging out together, and we support each other, and it's fun to be us.
If you could get parents to adopt just one of the tips in your book, what would it be?
Without a doubt, it would be mind, body, and soul time. It's probably the one that parents resist the most because we're all so busy, but it is the one that makes the biggest difference. If they're only going to do one thing in the whole book, that will make the biggest difference in terms of behavior immediately. Within the first day or two, they'll see a difference in behavior. It gets to the root cause of misbehavior with the belonging and significance that we talked about. It fosters that long-term relationship, and all parents want a teen who opens up and talks to them. That is how we make that happen. We keep those emotional connections going strong. We keep the communication flowing. When they get to the teen years, they will open up to us, or be more likely to open up to us than if we hadn't done that.
All right, sounds easy enough. Amy McCready, thank you so much for talking with us.
Thank you for having me.
That was Amy McCready, founder of Positive Parenting Solutions and the author of If I Have to Tell You One More Time, the revolutionary program that gets your kids to listen without nagging, reminding, or yelling. To hear more of this interview, check the links on our website, wpsu.org/take note. I'm Patty Satalia, WPSU.